Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
Don't you know we're gonna have a Solotopia? Solotopia? Solotopia?
Garden was lost, and so we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But
don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia? We are back with another hour of the Green Power and Wellness Show with Harvey Wasserman. The Solartopian Green Power and Wellness Show. We've got some great guests, including leading off with Rennie Cushing, Rennie Robert Cushing, Neilia Sargent, and others, who were down at the Entergy headquarters in New Orleans last week, simultaneous with the demonstration at Vermont Yankee to shut the nuclear plant there. Rennie is a founding member of the Clamshell Alliance, which staged the mass demonstrations at Seabrook, New Hampshire in the mid-1970s and is still going on, still an active and viable website, and still raising hell at nuclear sites. Rennie, are you with us?
Hey.
Rennie?
Yeah. Can you hear me?
Rennie Cushing. All right. Neilia Sargent, are you with us? Neilia there too? Okay, well, let's talk to you, Rennie, for starters. We'll have other people calling in.
Great.
We expect Neilia to call in. Rennie, you live near the nuclear plant in Seabrook, New Hampshire, and you have been fighting that plant since the 1970s. And we won't tell people how old you are, but
apparently
you're not yet eligible for Social Security, as I am.
Mm-hmm.
Tell us about the events of this past week in New Orleans. Why did you go to New Orleans, and what was going on at Vermont Yankee?
Well, we went to New Orleans because there are decisions being made that have a direct impact upon the health and safety and the democracy of people in New England. But those decisions aren't being made in New England. They're being made in New Orleans. And we went.
Why?
Because Entergy Corporation is the second largest operator of atomic plants in the country. And it is the owner of, among others, the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant, which is a Fukushima-style reactor. It's a clone to the Fukushima reactors that melted down last year. And the Entergy Corporation's the original license to operate the power plant expired on Wednesday, March 21st.
Those are the state permits. The permits of the state
and the federal permits. The original federal permits also.
Uh-huh.
It got a 40-year operating license. It had a certificate of public good issued by the Vermont Public Service Board. When Entergy Corporation acquired the Vermont Yankee plant in 2003 or 4, I can't remember what date. It did so with the understanding, with a promise to the state that it would abide by any conditions that the state would put on it concerning extension of a license beyond the original time frame. And the state Senate, the state legislature, voted overwhelmingly that Vermont Yankee should close as scheduled on March 21st, 2012. But Entergy decided not to respect the democracy, defied the legislature, and went to federal court to get an injunction to prohibit the elected officials from the state of Vermont from protecting the health and safety of people who live in that state, and have continued to operate the power plant. The license that they have from Vermont says the only reason that they can continue to operate after the 21st of March of this year is for purposes of decommissioning and decontaminating the plant. And so in response to this really outlaw activity by Entergy Corporation, a couple of things happened. In Vermont itself, just outside the plant at Entergy's Brattleboro headquarters for its nuclear reactor there was a mass demonstration. Over 1,000 people were arrested in what was the largest demonstration in over a generation in the state of Vermont. And at the same time, there was a small affinity group of people who went to Entergy's offices in White Plains, New York, the northeast region, and occupied that. And there was another small group of us from New England who went to Entergy's corporate headquarters. We wanted to speak to J. Wayne Leonard, who's the president and CEO of Entergy Corporation. We were confident that if we hoped that if we could have the chance to meet with him and explain what was happening in Vermont, and that Entergy would see the light and shut down the plant. We weren't able to. We occupied the Entergy tower, and eventually we were arrested. There were seven of us who were arrested and booked and processed.
Are you now cheese?
No, we're not quite cheese, but we've been through. We have been through the central, central booking place at in New Orleans. We were fortunate that the building, it was kind of interesting to be sitting, being processed, thinking about the place where you were being 8 feet underwater during Katrina. But it was interesting to go to New Orleans to talk about what was happening in New England by Entergy, because for some ways it's a bit of a reverse of how Louisiana people usually experience corporations. Entergy happens to be the only Fortune 500 company that's located in Louisiana. It's the largest corporation. And what the experience, generally speaking, in Louisiana is that large corporations that degrade the environment and the quality of life in Louisiana are usually controlled by New York or far away. This is an actual homegrown corporation that's doing ill to people in other areas. And we really...
Entergy, which is based in New Orleans, and isn't their corporate headquarters in Mississippi?
We visited their nuclear headquarters. Their corporate headquarters of Entergy Corporation it's on Loyola Ave in Louisiana, in New Orleans, Louisiana. Entergy Nuclear,
right,
which is its nuclear subsidiary, its headquarters was in Jackson, Mississippi. And yesterday there were a group of people, a group of us went to pay a visit to Entergy's corporate headquarters, to nuclear headquarters in Jackson, Mississippi. So we've had a series of actions that are signaling that there can be no business as usual for Entergy, as long as it continues to operate its Fukushima-style reactors. And perhaps the most egregious example of corporate arrogance and the one percenters is Entergy's continued operation of the Vermont Yankee plant in Vernon. But it also operates Indian Point. It also operates Pilgrim. It operates some of the most dangerous atomic facilities in the country.
Okay, so tell us, Rennie. We talked about Indian Point and Vermont Yankee a lot last week.
Good.
Entergy owns both those. Well, it owns two reactors at Indian Point and one at Vermont Yankee. A number of other nuclear plants around the country. They're basically a McNuke operator. You are the first, I believe, to go down to their actual headquarters in New Orleans,
mm-hmm,
and take the pop. So tell us about getting arrested at the Entergy headquarters. I saw a picture of you online, which you can post. You were wearing a suit. I didn't know that they had Salvation Armies down in New Orleans. Is that where you got it?
Well, we certainly didn't want our attire to detract from the message. And at some point, it seemed like we conflated. No, we entered the building on the morning of the 22nd and went past security, went into the office and said we wanted to speak with J. Wayne Leonard, and they began responding. The building became animated. Well, we wanted to make it clear that there was going to be no business as usual in Vermont, and there was no business as usual in New Orleans at the corporate headquarters. And the specter of people taking – we took over the main office there and wrapped crime scene tape around it, as it's very appropriate to do at that place. And eventually, put up a banner that said no business as usual on March 22nd, and we engaged in conversations with members of the security staff, with members of the public relations department, and with the local New Orleans Police Department. They were very concerned because of all the crowds that were gathering at the banks of elevators that saw that the Entergy office had been taken over and marked as a crime scene. I think it was a little confusing when they saw the police present there. Took a while, but we were able to hand out leaflets that explained what we were doing, so people knew that, for instance, that Entergy is operating the only atomic plant in the country whose cooling tower has collapsed, that Entergy lied to the state of
Vermont. Well, what's wrong with the collapsed cooling tower? I mean, come on, among friends.
A collapsed cooling tower is, it represents a pretty serious indication. It's kind of like the canary in the coal mine. When the collapsed cooling tower is just, it's representative of the kind of neglect of a plant of maintenance that is routine. If the cooling tower collapses, and the plant catches on fire, and the plant is leaking radioactive tritium into the ground from pipes that the company denies even exist. And then a year later, the company has to sheepishly acknowledge that it had been lying about the pipes, it had been lying about what the power plant consists of, it had been lying about the radioactive mess that's leaking into the ground. We were able to drive home that Entergy is a corporate outlaw, that it acts above the law, that it thwarts democracy, and it represents a threat to the health and safety. What was nice was to be received by other community activists in Louisiana who had a lot of empathy for us. Someone said, in New Orleans, of all places, they understand what it's like to have a disaster hit a community. But it's just, unlike the people at Fukushima, people from New Orleans could return to the city and rebuild. But, that's different from the experience of people of Fukushima today. And it's different.
Interesting. That's for sure. And I want to say, I just posted a piece at nukefree.org, nukefree.org. Occasionally, even those of us who have been doing this, Rennie and I have been doing this for 40 years, fighting nuclear power plant, but even every once in a while something just blows you away. And today I posted a piece that the Emperor Hirohito of Japan gave a speech. And in his speech to the nation, of course, and he's viewed as at least semi-divine, and in his speech he mentioned that Fukushima, that people are still in danger from radiation and that there's serious problems as a result of the nuclear plant. And the major media in Japan censored his remarks. They censored the emperor of Japan, and people in Japan are completely flipped out about this. I mean, he said just what you said, Rennie, about New Orleans. At least after Katrina, people could return. But the emperor of Japan implied or said that there's a tragedy at Fukushima, because not only can people not return, but they should be getting out of there, more of the people. And they censored his remarks. It's caused a nationwide uproar. Astounding. It's being like censoring Oprah here. Kendra, are you on the line with us? Kendra? All right. Rennie, can you tell us exactly what happened when you were arrested? A lot of people listening in have been arrested or are contemplating being arrested. You were in a suit and tie. You didn't wear your welder's outfit as you used to at Seabrook. What were the New Orleans police like when they came in and gave you the pop?
Well, I think they understood. We were really clear that we came to New Orleans not to commit a crime, but to prevent one. And I think in explaining the criminal activity and the criminal wrongdoing of Entergy, I think to a certain extent it engendered a fair amount of sympathy and understanding on the part of people. As the police officer was taking myself and Paul Gunter away in his cruiser to central booking, he asked the question, none of my business, but what are you protesting about? And we explained.
And then he handed you a joint, right?
Well,
just being New Orleans.
Not quite. He got down, we explained it, and he says, yeah, it's always money, isn't it? Always money. Which is true. That's what on some level, there was an understanding that it was really about money. And, for lack of better, this really is kind of a classic showdown between the 1% and the 99%. J. Wayne Leonard, who's this, this is the man who's the president of Entergy Corporation, which is the, it's the electric distribution company in Louisiana and Mississippi and Arkansas, in addition to being the owner of these merchant nuclear plants. But everybody knows Entergy in New Orleans because they have to pay their captive ratepayers. But Forbes magazine named named J. Wayne Leonard he was the second highest paid utility executive in the country. In the past 5 years, he made over $100 million. That's over $20 million a year. That's not quite Romney-esque, it's still a chunk of change. And I think
$20 million a year?
Yes.
In salary? What's that work out to an hour?
We don't know, but that's
he probably makes as much in an hour in bed at night sleeping as I do all year.
Right. Maybe, but I think at the outset, because we know what we're doing. We had a clear mission. Our beef was with the deciders at the, that were at that Entergy headquarters. And as we interacted, for instance, with the frontline people, with a receptionist, with a custodial staff, with other employees, now we respectfully leafleted them and explained it to them. Some of them were interested. Other of them, I think, were afraid that they'd be seen taking leaflets, and others just were kind of, they were curious. But I think particularly, for example, in talking about how much money J. Wayne Leonard makes, the fact that he makes $20 million a year, and I know that the person at the reception desk doesn't make nearly that amount of money.
Right.
That person has to pay her own electric bill too. I think because we acted in a tradition of nonviolent, direct action or civil resistance, and we were open. We explained what we did. We were responsible for what we did, and we were, we simply said we asked to meet with Mr. Leonard. He wasn't there, and we just said, well, we'll wait. And they asked us to wait outside, and said, no, we're quite comfortable here. And we sat, and I said, well, you can't do this. You're interfering with business. I said, well, we're quite comfortable here. And as my colleague Paul Gunter said, well, we're talking about trespass. We're here to talk about the trespass of radiation. We're here to talk about the trespass of energy on the people of Vermont and the people of New England, and that's where the real criminal activity is ongoing.
We are talking with Rennie Cushing, Robert Rennie Cushing of Seabrook, New Hampshire, a founder of the Clamshell Alliance, was arrested this week at the Entergy headquarters in New Orleans. Entergy owns the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant along with Indian Point and a number of other reactors.
Don't forget Pilgrim.
In Massachusetts, which the state of Massachusetts is fighting in terms of their license extension. So, Kendra, do we have Kendra on the line here?
Here's Kendra.
Kendra, what is your last name, Kendra?
Hi.
Kendra, hi. How are you?
I'm doing well. How are you?
And you're there with Rennie. Was Rennie well-behaved at the protest? Did he embarrass anybody? I mean, it's a question we always have to ask about Rennie.
No, he was fantastic.
Okay, great. And you were arrested at the Entergy headquarters in New Orleans as well?
I was, yes.
And do we have Nelia Sargent on the line with us?
She is. We are in a car on our way back to Nashville, so we've got one cell phone that we're using.
Okay, well, you're not driving, are you?
I am not driving, no.
Okay, as long as you're not driving, you can talk on the cell. So, with Rennie Cushing, can you tell us, there were eight of you, I guess, or seven who got arrested, so I got three of you here. What was your impression of the arrest situation? What happened to you? You were booked and then let go? What is all that? What happened to you once you were arrested?
Once we were arrested, we were taken to central lockup and booked there, but we had some amazing social justice attorneys that were working for us and got us out pretty quickly. So we weren't in there too long.
5 hours.
I would say about, yeah.
5 hours? 5 o'clock, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Uh-huh.
But we were joined by arraigned yesterday, and we have a tentative trial date of April 24th. Although that may be flexible, but that's the time. We're planning to go back and put Entergy on trial in New Orleans for its crimes.
You are, and how are you going to do that? What are you going to do in New Orleans to put them on trial?
It's a defense of necessity. Our actions in going to New Orleans and trying to have Entergy respect democracy and the rule of law and the health and safety of people of Vermont. We acted out of necessity, and that the real criminal activity, we may have been arrested and charged with trespass, but the real criminals are the ones who had us arrested. And we hope to be able to explain to a judge in New Orleans, what we were doing and get adjudicated that, in fact, we were not criminals, but we were crime fighters. And
Kendra,
rather than being incarcerated, we should be applauded.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'll applaud you right now. There you go. The sound of one hand clapping. Kendra, what penalties? And Nelia, chime in if you will. What penalties do you face if you're convicted of trespass there at the Entergy headquarters?
I believe that it will be fines or possibly some jail time, though.
No more than 6 months.
6 months in jail.
No more than 6 months, but it, this is we'll see.
Uh huh. And how much is the fine?
I think the fine could be hundreds of dollars. I don't know what it is.
Not $20 million. Like you won't have to pay a year's salary for the head of Entergy.
No, we won't. We won't do that. I mean, I'm sure that J. J. Wayne Leonard, at the time he goes to the bathroom, will make more than enough money to pay his thing one of our minds. unless he's really backed up for the day.
Actually, Randy, I heard that they were thinking of making you the new coach of the New Orleans Saints.
Who dat?
Yeah. You don't have a bounty system, do you, on nuclear power plants, I hope?
No, but we don't have a bounty system, but what we're trying to do is we're trying to cull the herd. We're trying to take down, I mean, quite frankly, obviously, you know, the threat to the global health and safety is, you know, incalculable because of the actions of the nuclear industry. And those of us who are, you know, trying to resist that and protect the planet and try to act not just for ourselves but for future generations, you know, and our responsibility to act, we try to be strategically, and we recognize that that in doing triage, that the immediate danger comes from the Fukushima-style, the GE Mark I reactors, and those are the ones that freeze off Fukushima's. That's part of the campaign that's being organized under the leadership of, you know, Beyond Nuclear and other national anti-nuclear organizations, and, you know, Entergy is one of those targets. Entergy really has ruined their brand now. We've just, you know, our message is Occupy Entergy, and that if Entergy won't shut down the nukes, then the people will shut down Entergy.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Kendra, what, you want to add to that?
Absolutely. This, corporation, they're not only, this is going beyond just the nuclear issue into the, you know, corporate subversion of our democratic process, that these corporations believe that they are above the law. And so that's part of the message that we're really holding them to, is that you are not above the law, and that if the federal government won't hold them accountable and the federal courts will not hold them accountable, that we, the people, are going to hold them accountable. And ruin their brand. Let people know what is going on, because it's not just in Vermont that they are, you know, perpetrating these crimes against the people and crimes against democracy, but elsewhere in the country. And this is really an issue of intergenerational oppression. You know, the nuclear issue and the incredible longevity of the waste really represents a crime against future generations as well.
Nelia, are you there? Nelia, you haven't had a word yet. Can we talk to Nelia, Sergeant?
Hello.
Nelia.
Hi.
Hey, Nelia, you were arrested at Seabrook way
yes.
back when. We won't reveal your age here, but how does getting arrested at the headquarters of Entergy in New Orleans compare with getting arrested at Seabrook?
Oh, this was a very fine, fine action. I will say that here, it was quite touching. Guy Chichester's son, Ben Chichester, stated to the police, "We take our cue from Rosa Parks and Dr. Martin Luther King," and instantly the police force got it. The whole holding facility got it. The booking staff understood what we were up to and why we were there. Without knowing all the details, they got it. And there was a depth of respect. We were handled with the utmost professionalism. We had no idea what to expect. I mean, we knew we weren't going into Bull Connors, Birmingham, but we did not know how we would be received. We had
and
heard.
How would you characterize your reception?
Extremely professional, extremely concerned for our well-being, very considerate. They really went out of their way, and I'm afraid that part of that was the 1% class privilege. We were dressed as business people, to the best of our perfect ability. But, you know, had we been a multiracial group of occupiers with, you know, T-shirts and whatever, jeans, perhaps the behavior would have been different. I don't know. But I will say that I personally found it somewhat disgusting, the class privilege. They treated us with kid gloves. They rolled out the red carpet. They were very concerned for our well-being and our safety. They were very concerned about the roughness of the jails, and I frankly doubt that these were any different from the New York City or Washington, D.C. jail and prison, some of the state prison systems that I've seen in the past.
If you want to get arrested, you would recommend doing it down in New Orleans for starters, I suppose.
Absolutely. Occupy Entergy is our theme. That is going to become the clamshell reunion this summer, focusing on try to blend the long-standing multi-decade nuclear power resistance movement with the Occupy, and I hope an anti-corporate focus and a shift now beyond any one individual corporation, but certainly to begin with Entergy. The corporate arrogance here is humbling. It's profound. It's a profound subversion of our democratic traditions.
We are speaking with protesters who were down in New Orleans getting arrested at the Entergy headquarters in New Orleans. Did they play any music for you as you were being carried away? No, you didn't have a jazz
rocking.
Band.
The streets
Pete
are rocking.
Pete didn't show up to accompany your trip to the jail?
No, but we provided our own. Yeah, but we were fortunate because, as you know, what we intend to do when we go back for our trial is because Entergy's actions really do represent the death of democracy, and we're going to have a New Orleans jazz band. We're going to have a band accompany us with a second line, and we're going to go from Entergy's corporate headquarters to the local courthouse for our trial, just to march in true New Orleans tradition.
Ah. So I take it you're going to enjoy your time in New Orleans as best possible. I always wanted to find a nuke in Florida. Actually, you know, I won't say I'm disappointed, but I'd really like to focus my energies on Turkey Point.
Turkey Point, right?
So you know, you can go sit on the beach in between your rests. That will be good. So now, what is the situation at Vermont Yankee now in terms of shutting them down? Kendra or Rennie or Amelia, can you give us an update, and then we're going to take a break and we'll come back.
Kendra?
Deafening silence over there. Kendra, Amelia, Rennie, what's happening now at Vermont Yankee? Where do we stand?
Well, we have an interesting showdown between the federal government and the state government and the nuclear industry and Entergy, in that the federal government. And, you know, Entergy has gone to the federal government to preempt the ability of the state of Vermont to have any ability to exercise control over the health and safety issues relating to its citizens. It basically said to the state of Vermont, we don't care about you. We're going to the federal courts, and the federal courts have said, you know, this is all under the domain of the Nuclear Regulatory Commission. It's all, you know, the whole industry harkens back to the Manhattan Project, to the secrecy of surrounding the atomic bomb and the flip side of that coin, the peaceful atom. There are
all right. So all right, we'll come back today. We had a pretty good discussion about it last time. We're going to take a short break now, and when we come back, we'll talk more about nuclear power, Entergy, and we're going to segue a bit into the death penalty. Well, Rennie Cushing is also a great pioneer in abolishing the death penalty. So we will take this break here. You're going to hear Pete Seeger, and then when we come back, Dana Lyons singing songs from Solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
All right, don't you know we're going to have a Solartopia? Solartopia. That's the great Pete Seeger. We are here at the Solar Power, Solartopia Green Power Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman, sometimes known as Sluggo. Once called Young Thunder Bunny back in the days when I played baseball. We are talking with Rennie, with Nelia, and with Kendra about their arrests at the Entergy headquarters in New Orleans. I know a lot of people listening in have been arrested, but some are concerned about being arrested. Rennie, you've been arrested a few times, sometimes on purpose and sometimes not. When you've been arrested on purpose, what is the key to a good civil disobedience action? And tell how many times you've been arrested, anyway?
Well, I mean, I've probably been arrested a couple dozen times.
You can't remember anymore?
I think 25.
Oh, good. You're getting into Abby Hoffman territory there.
No, I think that, to me, it's, an act of civil resistance is part of a continuum. It's not, and I think I realized that civil resistance, it's a tool that's been used for, you know, since the beginning of the struggle for social justice, which has been going on long before I was born and will be going on long after I'm food for the worms. And I think it's part of a, you know, it's part of a tradition in our country that, you know, it involves speaking truth to power. And I try to engage in civil resistance using a classic, you know, nonviolent discipline. And it requires being prepared to take the consequences for your actions. I don't do it lightly. Because it is, you know, it can be, it's not something that people should take lightly. But the times that I've been arrested, I felt like I had no choice, if you understand that. That sometimes...
Well, tell us about that. Why did you feel you had no choice?
I find no choice because quite, you know, there are myths about democracy, I think, in our society. And in a way, it's when people feel really disempowered, when you, it seems like you have no other option, sometimes just saying no is the most important thing you can do. And it's just that very act of saying no that gets multiplied, that helps bring about the conditions for transformations, the conditions you know, to change in our society. But I do, you know, I try to act thoughtfully, I try to act respectfully of, you know, people with whom I interact. Because ultimately, I believe that, you know, the work about nonviolence, for me, it's about transforming, not just about making an individual statement, but it's about transforming people who are acting in an oppressive situation. I mean, I really do make an appeal to people who take me into custody to take a look at what they're doing and ask themselves, why is it that you're putting me in custody, as opposed to the people with whom I'm having, you know, a disagreement, and, you know, in whose...
You mean like that guy who's making $20 million a year?
Like the guy who's making $20 million a year. I mean, who's the enemy? I mean, who's, you know, who really is the threat to the health and safety? You know? An aging revolutionary and fading romantic guy like me, or somebody who's making lots of money all the time and who's making decisions that have a direct negative impact upon health and safety and lives of people?
Anelia and
yes.
Kendra, do you want to tell us why you're you got arrested?
Ah, yes. This is Anelia.
Is this Kendra?
Would you like Kendra? Here's Kendra.
No, you're the one. Anelia, is that you?
Hi, Harvey.
Okay, go ahead.
I'm sorry.
That's why you got arrested. What was the point of your getting arrested? How did you feel? But why did you feel that you had to get arrested here? For people who are intending or thinking about doing civil disobedience or want to understand mm-hmm. people who do civil disobedience, you went all the way to New Orleans to sit at the headquarters of this poor, defenseless corporation whose CEO only makes $20 million a year and has otherwise on food stamps, probably
uh-huh.
signed up for Medicare. What is your? Why did you feel that you needed to break the law?
Well, I felt that this was really highlighted the inherent flaw in our current judicial system, in which, you know, the true criminal actors here are getting off. These corporations have corporate personhood. They have all the powers of people, but, you know, they're not getting arrested. And in fact, what they're doing is really, as I've said before, you know, subverting our democratic process and committing crimes against people and against the earth. And so, you know, this was really an act that highlighted that for me, and I felt for, you know, the others in our group, that, you know, it showed that dichotomy there. Where is the justice system really at? And really pushes the envelope for people to think more deeply about, you know, what is democracy and what kind of system are we living in now? And as others have said before, you know, the people that were arresting us, the cops that were arresting us, the people that were booking us, you know, we were having this conversation with them about, you know, why we were there, and they agreed with us, and they recognized the inherent flaw there. And I think that that's really powerful, and it's something that they can continue to think about, you know, in their own roles as supposed law enforcement, when the law is not serving the people, when it is in fact serving, you know, a criminal actor like Entergy.
So you felt, do you mind if we ask how old you are?
I'm 29.
29. So
mm-hmm.
you've already got a, here you are, not even 30, you've already got a rap sheet. Is this your first arrest?
Yes. Yes, it was.
All right. Well, hand the phone over to Nelia. I know that Nelia has been arrested before.
Yeah.
Nelia, can you tell us what prompted you to break the law here? What made you go to the you traveled all the way down to New Orleans? I guess you're driving back to New England, right?
We are.
Okay,
and it is long ways out of our ways, and it is not exactly conveniently located for us, the New England National Guard. We were first responders to the immediate emergency going on with the illegal operation of this rogue corporation. And for me, what drew me to travel this far, and believe me, it's not convenient, it's becoming clearer and clearer the depth of the corporate dictatorship that we are living under in the United States. Entergy is one example of a much deeper issue where the corporations are ruling us. All of the so-called environmental laws and legislation that was won and civil rights work, there's such a fundamental violation of the sovereignty of the people. Our fundamental rights to self-determination, to self-governance, which the environmental laws don't begin to touch. It's the rape of the earth, and we're killing the planet. And it's the corporations that I believe are the pivotal to the destruction of the planet and the fundamental, not only human rights, but planetary rights of survival.
What's the point of getting arrested? I mean, what makes you think that that's going to have an impact? What would it do for you personally?
Well, I believe that by putting our bodies on the line in a relatively safe environment compared to what others face, certainly our elders who came down here to face Bull Connor didn't face the same level of safety that we faced. Our risks were minimal. And for me, putting our bodies on the line is a chance to make a statement, to put our mouths and our bodies in alignment with our values, to fundamentally speak truth to power at a fundamental level, and while bearing deep respect for every human being we interacted with at any level, in any costume, role, authority, we demonstrated our absolute unwillingness to cooperate, to withdraw our consent, complicity, and cooperation from the corporate dictatorship under which we are bound. The reality
is... Do you think
is,
that your arrest, Nelia and Rennie, you're still on the phone there, is going to have an impact on the future of Vermont Yankee?
I do. It's a beginning. It's only a beginning.
I'm not pronouncing man and wife. Sorry, go ahead.
I mean, I think that, you know, not just Vermont Yankee, but it's the nuclear industry. You know, sometimes you get arrested because it's a political moment. And I couldn't help but note that this is the centennial of the Bread and Roses strike, which was, an iconic moment in social justice and in labor history.
Right. Now, 100 years ago, I guess now, this was the IWW, Industrial Workers of the World, that organized a huge strike, mostly of women in Lawrence and Lowell, Massachusetts, in the textile mills. You had people of all different nationalities, and I think 12 or 14 different languages were spoken among the strikers, this was the Bread and Roses strike.
In what I remember about that, because I come from a mill family. My people were working in Manchester, New Hampshire, just up the Merrimack River when the Bread and Roses strike happened in 1912. And sometimes there are events that that have an impact far beyond their immediate locale, and that certainly was what happened in the Lawrence strike of 1912. But it also involved people acting in solidarity with the Lawrence strikers. And so it wasn't just that the strike took place in Lawrence, but what Lawrence people did is sent their children. The children of the strikers were sent away to New York City, to Manchester, to Burlington, Vermont, to be cared for by other working people, by other people who supported the actions of the strikers in Lawrence, because they knew that the outcome of that strike would have an impact on working conditions everywhere, and which it ended up doing when it eventually won. I think now, you know, I responded to the call from my brothers and sisters in Vermont to come and take on entity at this particular historic moment when its license expires and it continues on in the face of the democratic objections by the people of Vermont. And to me, it's acting in solidarity, because I do know that what happens to Vermont Yankee will have an impact upon the nuclear industry everywhere. And that's why it's really important for a lot of different historical reasons. It is a political moment. And I know that,
absolutely,
things happen just, you know, a little bit of it's all about the little drops of water that fill stuff up. But that's how change comes. It's one drop. It's not always the flood. It's just like the little single drops of water that ultimately, make.
Neil, yeah, what do you want to say about that?
Well, single drops of water turn a mill, singly none, as the song says. And so this is simply a beginning, only a beginning, to a much deeper, this is a long-term struggle. No one single action is going to turn around Vermont.
Yeah.
But
yeah,
we are here in solidarity with the people of Vermont and the people of Fukushima.
I began the
walk in Seabrook March 2nd with Paul Gunter and Rennie, Ben Chichester, that walked from Seabrook down to Plymouth, which is another Entergy-owned Mark I boiling water reactor, identical twin to the Fukushima. Five of the six Fukushima reactors are these reactors. And we stand in solidarity with the people of Fukushima, and it's only a beginning. It's a much longer, deeper campaign. And as a beginning, I think this was a magnificent send-off. The three coordinated actions and then our follow-up visit to the Jackson Nuclear Energy Headquarters, National Nuclear Headquarters in Jackson. Just a courtesy liaison notification to put them on notice that the world is watching, and we do intend to occupy their brand name. We do intend to ruin their credibility.
Well, they seem to be doing a pretty good job of that themselves. We're talking with Neelia Sargent, Rennie Cushing, Kendra, people who were arrested at the Entergy headquarters in New Orleans. Entergy, the owner of the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant, as well as Pilgrim in Massachusetts and Indian Point in New York. They were arrested this past week and put briefly in jail and are continuing. Do you have plans for another demonstration coming up?
The SAGE Alliance has ongoing plans, and let me give you to Kendra, who's deeply involved with that.
Okay.
I'm one of the nonviolence trainers, but she's one of the organizers.
Okay. Kendra, what's coming up next for people listening in for Vermont Yankee and for other nuclear actions?
Well, we are currently in the developing stages. We do have a large legal rally that we're going to be doing here within the next few weeks. We're hoping to have Shumlin and Sanders there, so it's a little dependent.
Wait. Shumlin is the governor, Peter Shumlin, the governor of Vermont. Bernie Sanders, the U.S. senator from Vermont.
That's correct. Yeah.
April 14th, I believe. Where will it be?
That will be in downtown Brattleboro. And we are currently in the... I am not sure of the time. They were still developing that when I took off for New Orleans. We are also planning for ongoing actions throughout the spring. So that's in the development stages, and we'll be discussing that at the upcoming and throughout the summer and ongoing until Vermont Yankee is shut down.
And where we stand on Vermont Yankee is that it's still in court, that the Entergy has taken the state of Vermont and to court to prevent Vermont from shutting Vermont Yankee, even though Vermont, they had a deal with Vermont, and Vermont has decided not to reissue permits for the continued operation. Entergy is continuing to operate, and now they're telling the federal courts that Vermont has no right to exercise any kind of supervision over Vermont Yankee. Is that correct?
That's correct. And the thing that's really appalling about that is that the laws that Judge Murtha, the federal district court judge that ruled on this case, struck down actually did not address any radiological safety concerns, which is what Entergy was arguing, was that these were preempted by the Atomic Energy Act. But they addressed areas that were clearly left to states to regulate nuclear reactors, environmental concerns, economic concerns, and those types of things, reliability issues. And so the judgment that Mirtha handed down, really, I mean, it could have been written by the legal counsel for the Entergy Corporation. It could be very limiting for other states as well, but he struck down these laws using legislative record, and that flies in the face of legal precedent. So there is some hope that Vermont could win on appeal, but we're not waiting for that. We're taking action now.
Okay. Do you have anything to add on that? I want to talk to you, Rennie, in the last couple minutes about the death penalty, your work on the death penalty. But what do you want to tell us real quickly about Vermont and the nuclear plant and Entergy?
Me or Neilia? I would just tell you that I'm a shareholder of Entergy Corporation now, and as a partial owner of that, it's my intent to speak with other shareholders to try to get management to change its direction, to move away from the nuclear option and move towards Solartopia.
Okay. Neilia, what do you have to say?
Well, indeed, the corporate shareholder action, I think there are many actions to educate the shareholders. That is an ongoing forward-moving direction. There's many. I think we need to be very diverse, as we did in the Clamshell Alliance. The more diverse our actions can be, and the greater the creativity under our nonviolent discipline and code of conduct, I think there's tremendous room for creativity, flexibility, and room to educate. I was astonished at how receptive everyone I've met along the route here and throughout New Orleans was, basically respectful. And I did not encounter anyone who expressed any opposition whatsoever to our actions, including random people in restrooms in the highway rest areas.
Cool. Very good. We like that, including the police, apparently. We're kind of glad you were there.
I mean, Katrina is a powerful lesson on the corporate arrogance here. And unlike, as Rennie said, unlike the people of Fukushima, the people of Katrina are coming home. It's horrendous tragedy, horrendous shock ongoing, and they are very receptive to this message.
All right. Well, if you protested the suspension of the coach of the New Orleans Saints, they would have probably been doubly appreciative. So we'll go along with that.
It is a company town.
I want to go on real quickly, Rennie, and give you a chance to talk a bit about your group and opposition to the death penalty. We have about 7 minutes left. Can you give us a quick rundown on what you're doing about the death penalty?
Well, I can't. It's interesting. The last time I was arrested, was 7 years ago at the occasion of the 1,000th execution in the modern era to take place in Raleigh, North Carolina. I was part of a group of people who attempted to interpose ourselves between, the executioner and a prisoner to act in a way that, did not debase human life and take away the human right to life that everyone is entitled to.
Do you see a connection between your work on the death penalty and your work against nuclear power?
Yes, absolutely. I mean, I care about it, at the fundamentally, they're both. It's all about justice, and it's all about human dignity, and it's about the right. It's about human rights. I see, my work, as for a long period of my life, I spent working in the environmental justice movement against atomic power plants. For the past 15 years, I've been working as a human rights advocate. I'm the director of a group called Murder Victims Families for Human Rights, and we're an organization of survivors of homicide victims who oppose the death penalty. And we do so because we don't think the death penalty is a criminal justice sanction. We think it's a human rights violation, that it violates the Article 3 of the Universal Declaration of Human Rights, which is the right to life itself, and Article 5, which is the right to be free from torture. But we are the voice of victim survivors in the global debate about capital punishment. And, as I know, I get to this because my father was shotgunned to death in front of my mother in our family home a few years ago. And a year ago, my brother-in-law was murdered in a hauntingly similar crime. And
wow.
For me,
talking about, and for those of us who, in our organization, talking about what you do in the aftermath of homicide, in the aftermath of violence, is not an intellectual exercise. It's part of what our lives are. And we're folks who, you know, have had the unspeakable interject itself into our lives, and, you know, muddling through it, have come to conclude that a ritual killing by public employees of the person who killed our family member is not going to bring anybody back. It's just going to, you know, it's going to replicate the kind of behavior that brought us to pain to begin with. And so as victim survivors, as people who we believe have a stake in the discussion about what you do in the aftermath of violence, that we say that you shouldn't kill other people. And so we are active and part of a growing and global movement to abolish the death penalty, where the death penalty is going the way, we believe, of chattel slavery, of the subjugation of women. It's it's an anachronism. It's an activity whose time should have gone a long while ago. And we're active. This is probably about a 3-hour conversation. I'm trying to give you a bit of a taste. But
well, you got 3 more minutes. Tell us about your organization. What's the website, and what exactly do you do?
The organization our website is it's Murder Victims Families for Human Rights. It's the acronym is MVFHR, and www.mvfhr.org is our website. And what we're the voice of victims in the global death penalty debate. So we are, we're people. Everyone in our organization is a survivor of a homicide victim. That's either of criminal murder, of terrorist bombings, of disappearances, or of state executions. And we advocate for policies that that promote human rights and that really meet the needs of victims of crime. And we try to be a bridge between the modern death penalty abolition movement and between the crime victims movement. And sometimes we're a challenge to both. But they are two parallel movements that grow out of the modern civil rights movement that oftentimes aren't always communicating and can't always see their commonality of interest. So we're active, at the state level, trying to do policy work, trying to promote legislation that repeals the death penalty, that meets the needs of victims of crime. We work internationally because we realize that, there should be abolition without borders. And so we act in solidarity with our, allies in other retentionist countries. Speaking of commonality, my colleague, Toshi Kazama, who's Japanese, is on his way to Taiwan. But it's fascinating to do the overlap between anti-death penalty and anti-nuclear work in places such as Hiroshima. You can imagine what it's like to speak in Hiroshima, where there is a death house located, to speak in opposition to the death penalty and also to speak about nuclear power. It's kind of an interesting conflict.
All right. We've been talking with Rennie Cushing, a founder of the Clamshell Alliance, which organized the first mass protests at Seabrook, New Hampshire, and now the executive director of Murder Victims Families for Human Rights. Neelia Sargent, a longtime veteran of anti-nuclear protests, and Kendra, I missed your last name.
Ulrich.
Ulrich, okay, Kendra Ulrich, a protester also. All three of you were arrested at the Entergy headquarters in New Orleans in the past few days, and you're affiliated, of course, with the group. Were there about 150 arrests at the Vermont Yankee nuclear plant these past few days? And that, of course, is going to continue the saga of the shutdown of Vermont Yankee, owned by Entergy of New Orleans, continues to escalate in the courts and on the ground. Entergy is also being targeted, of course, for its ownership of the Pilgrim nuclear plant in Massachusetts, where they're trying to get a new license, and Indian Point in New York, where the state of New York told them that they're going to have problems with their water permit. This has been the Solartopia Green Power Hour. Thank you so much, the three of you, for being with me and honoring us at the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show.
No nukes.
Doing the great work you're doing. No nukes. We'll see you in Solartopia. This has been another hour of the Green Power and Wellness Show. Pete Seeger is going to take us away with a song for Solartopia, and we will see you again next week with a whole new show about the emerging realities of Solartopia, a world where nuclear power and fossil fuels have been abolished,
and we get all our energy with social justice, peace, and freedom from renewable sources and our dear, dear Mother Earth. See you in a week.
We've found, but don't you know we're gonna have a solar-topia.